ladies and gentlemen of the jury.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Here we go, Cofield and Company on a Wednesday. You heard it, Battle Born Studios, or as we like to call it, the Battle Born Broadcast Center. Willie's here. Justin Watkins will be along in the middle of the show. Tons of good spots on the way, including more hype for the donut eating contest at halftime of UNLV in Syracuse. One of your favorite things, Willie, is to talk to our friends from the competitive eating world. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have, like, the whole show invited, so I chose to go with the lead dog who's here every day, and truly a chubbo, and, you know, I love competitive eating, so Mickey Sudo is going to be with us in 15. I sent out the warning yesterday, I don't know if you were listening, but take a deep breath. We both get way too excited when these athletes are on.
I'll be fine.
Okay.
I'll be fine, because I don't think that I've been on the show like for a repeat appearance with one of the competitive eaters.
Right.
It's always, so I think every single one so far was
first time. So you're just like juiced up.
Yeah.
You're juiced up. Yeah. All right. Well, Willie's busy all the time. You have a lot of beats that you cover. As one of the guys who's working with AP and WG Ramirez, is your own site. So you're covering stuff all the time. Is that it? Is that it with what we saw? Not your beats. Is that it with what we saw with the Aces?
Man, I really think so. I think it's over to the extent where I think it's hard for me to without going into detail, but we're going to be talking about
it, I would imagine, throughout the show or at least one more time. But based off of what Becky said last night, Becky Hammon, I asked her that, not after the Olympics, Steve. I asked her preseason, first game, after the South Carolina exhibition, asked her about all the tour stops and the hype and the everything that's been going on and the added commercials and the added publicity. I said all that to her. Said it all at the beginning of the season. No, we're embracing it. It's part of the deal. Bup, 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 bup. No. We can handle it. Then after the Olympics, hey, we're not going to use that as an excuse, which they shouldn't. Yes, they have a lot of players, you know, but some of them were in the 3x3. Some of them were eliminated earlier. Their four players were there that were on the U.S. Olympic team, the one gold, but there were other teams that had players, coaches, players on other countries. So she downplayed it earlier in the season. So I appreciate and respect everything she said yesterday, but the problem that I have is that earlier this season, when it was addressed, she downplayed it and made us feel kind of stupid for asking that question.
But in her defense, that is what you do at the beginning of the season. But here's the thing. She revealed the truth pretty early in the season that she was worried. She did. Because she talked about they had some bad losses early on that they were unaccustomed to, and some of them weren't competitive.
But she
did getting these folks motivated is a little bit tougher right now. I'm trying to get through to them that the league is better.
Actually, well, to a degree, because that's another thing that I would bring up, because we would ask her, Becky, you've always said your first concern, you're worried about what your team should be doing on the court, not other teams. You're not worried about what the other team is doing or who you're playing. It's not a matter of that. It's what the Las Vegas Aces, the two-time defending champs. I even said to her, this league has caught up to you. Last year, Sandy Brundello, I mean, I've been repetitive with that same comment. Last year, Sandy Brundello said, it's the Aces and the rest of the league. We have to catch up. And by the finals, the Liberty, you know, caught up to get there and contend. This year, the league was better as a whole. And as we saw down the stretch, the Washington Mystics 0-12 to start the season, and they get into the, anyway, you know, they're not gonna just go down. You know, I think that they're going to put up a good fight in Game 3. They may face force a Game 4, but Aces just can't do it by herself. I say this with the utmost respect, you know, in terms of her physical look. She looks tired. I asked her that question right when they got back from Paris for a story that my colleague was writing on. He needed some quotes from practice, some one-on-one time. Asia granted me a one-on-one. She just looked weathered. She looked tired. She looked exhausted with everything that she's been doing, from the shoe drop to the publicity to the off-season commercials to the Olympic trials to traveling to Paris to winning the gold. It's a lot. It's a lot for a human being, professional athlete or not. So
I'm actually shocked you're coming in here and accepting the they're done narrative.
Yeah, I don't. They're not winning three in a row. They're not. I said it last week. If the Aces need to win one game in Brooklyn, they need to win one game in Brooklyn in order to win this series. They didn't. They're not winning three in a row. It's just not going to happen. Not against the New York Liberty. Not that team.
Yep. I mean, I got a lot to say on this, but I thought this was pretty obvious with what was going to happen. Maybe they pull off the miraculous comeback. Obviously, they've got championship pedigree, but the Las Vegas Aces are they're against it right now. Giveaway time. Iron Maiden's in town on Saturday. Mick Ultra Arena, AXS.com is where you can get your tickets. It's the MUA on Saturday. Iron Maiden, 364-1100, caller 7. Two tickets for Iron Maiden. Griffin's going to hook you up. We get into some competitive eating coming up, some hockey later on, a lot of the conference chaos stuff, and more on the Raiders drama, which we'll hit later in the show rather than early. The latest with talks around the league and Devontae Adams finding his way out of Las Vegas.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Ranked number 3 in the world. Ranked number 1 in the world for women. With 9 victories here on the corner of Cerf and Stillwell, I give you Mickey Sudo!
I give you Mickey Sudo, who's going to be in Vegas. UNLV alum, big event coming up with the pregame meet and greet up on the Torch Terrace. Willie, Mickey's going to be there. Kenny Mayne's going to be there. And then we've got a competition of eating donuts. Mickey's in. Mickey, how are you? It's Steve and Willie in Vegas.
I'm great. I'm pumped for this weekend.
I'm not. I'm very scared. When I was offered this spot, I said it was one of the scariest decisions I've ever had to make in my life. But, you know, you're the pro, so I'm sure you're like, you're looking at the competition, you're like, this is going to be so easy.
No, I'm not like that. I mean, we're going to be competing against, I mean, we've got some fun celebrity guests who are going to bring their A game, but I mean, this is expected to be a huge crowd. There are going to be a lot of eyes on me. So, I mean, the pressure's on, and I don't know. I'm just looking forward to a good time.
So my question is, Mickey, when you have a situation like this where it's somewhat of a, like a, like at the All-Star game, it's not the All-Star game, it's the celebrity game.
It's a pro-am.
It's a pro-am. Do you put it in the back of your head like, I cannot let any of these jabronis beat me?
No, I mean, yeah, it would be more shocking than anything. I mean, I guess I'd be shocked and then I'd be really excited that we might have some, like, new blood on the competitive eating circuit. But no, I don't really put that sort of pressure on myself. You know, I guess the only pressure I feel is to put on a good show. I want everybody to, you know, come to Torch Terrace excited. I want everybody to be, like, you know, fired up for the game, look forward to the halftime entertainment. I just want everybody to have a good time. So that's the only way I feel the pressure.
I am on your Wikipedia page, and I immediately did a search for the word donut. I do not see one. Do you know how many you could take down?
She's done donut eating contests, okay. And I think you've done it this year. Have you done a full donut? Because I know you did the donut holes this year.
Yeah, so I did a – Salvation Army hosted a donut eating contest earlier this year. But the thing is, all donuts are kind of like – no donuts are created equal. So right. In terms of size, consistency, density, even temperature – you know, so I don't exactly know what the donuts are going to be like on Friday. So that's a huge variable.
You have no information, nor do I. I know where they're getting the donuts from. I'm not going to announce where it's from. It's more of a cakey style donut. And the rules are basically it's 2 dozen and it's speed eating. So I've been saying all along, I think you could do 2 dozen donuts in a couple of minutes. Do you have any idea? Like, did you do any sort of test eat? Have you trained for this specifically?
Yeah. I mean, again, it depends if it's going to be like a light Krispy Kreme type donut or more of like a dense, hearty, yeasty donut. I think more recently, hold on, there's some sort of beeping going on. Oh my God, look. I think more recently I did, I was in Thailand and there were denser donuts. I want to say I did something like, 56 in 10 minutes. But, you know, they could fly. Do you know if we're allowed to dunk? That's another variable. I'm really just here. I'm rolling with the punches on this one.
I know. You're so, because you're a pro, you're great at this. So you're like, yeah, whatever it is. I've been asking about the dunking, whether it would be water, if you could do dunk it in milk. I think I read that for some donut eating contest in the past, and Mickey Sudo was on with us, UNLV alum, that you prefer black coffee?
Exactly. I mean, it's kind of like when I'm eating, when I'm competing in savory foods, I like something sweet or refreshing. If I'm competing in a really sweet food, I like something, you know, bitter like coffee. So it's kind of like to offset. And that's really just to combat flavor fatigue, or that's what we call it. You know, just like when that cloying sweetness starts to get to you on like donut number 23, you have a sip of black coffee and it's like, okay, we're back to baseline. We're ready for another one. So yeah, I think if I were to have it my way, I would do dunking. I would opt for hot liquids. I would use hot coffee. Yeah, that's how I'd go about it. I mean, milk is an interesting choice, though. I don't know. That's new to me.
Yeah, that one, I love milk, but I was toying with that a little bit. I haven't trained yet, and I might try to do a little eat-off maybe later tonight or tomorrow. That's another question. Mickey Sudo is in this donut eating contest. It's to raise awareness for Breast Cancer Month. It's at the game at UNLV and Syracuse, going against local celebs, which I'll use celeb very lightly for me. Are we supposed to fast? Like sometime during this week? Obviously, the clock is ticking here. Am I supposed to fast
Don't
for a day and a half?
Don't give any tips. No tips.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I probably, well, because we're going to be eating pretty late in the day. I mean, if you've had your breakfast and your midday snack and your lunch and, you know, a few beers at the game, I mean, you might not be in any condition to eat a couple donuts. So I myself will be eating a little bit lighter that day. But I mean, you know, I don't think it's going to be a strict capacity contest. But I mean, you know, I guess it's all relative.
Yeah. Here's my challenge. I was going to say, Mickey, here's my challenge. I have to work the second half on the sidelines as a broadcaster. So I'm like, really, I'm going to be pushing the limits here. You know, the football players will be out there sweating, you know, what's off and not vomiting. I might be vomiting just walking on the sidelines.
No, you'll have that like surge of energy from all the sugar you'll consume.
I like it.
I don't know. I like it. Silver lining. Yeah.
So Mickey, when you train for, so there's many different ones, right? There's the quantity for the longer duration, or there's something like this, speed eating. What are the different types of training you maybe do for, I don't know, I'm just throwing this out there, I'm spitballing here, but for your esophagus, for your, you know, your, like Steve asked, for fasting. Here it's a speed, it's not, that's a, it's how many two dozen can go down in a, whatever it is, 5 minutes, or it's just in terms of time.
Yeah, it's two dozen donuts, as fast as we can do.
So is the training different, basically?
Yeah, I guess familiarity with the food is probably the most essential component. So, like, I think of, like, chicken wings and baby back ribs as, like, a speed contest because we don't really get full. It's how quickly can you manipulate around the bone, really. Like, how quickly can you get the meat off the bone? So I really just think, first of all, you don't want to be, you know, figuring out the anatomy of a chicken wing mid-contest when there's so much on the line. So it's like the more familiar you are, like, so, I mean, it's kind of a disadvantage because I don't really know what kind of donuts we're going into other than I think if they're the ones readily available at Allegiant Stadium, I have a good guess. But known for their pink in color, I don't know, nature. But anyway, where was I going with this? So yeah,
training.
I think being familiar with the foods, like knowing how much or how quickly they absorb liquid if you're dunking, or how much liquid you need to take in if you're just, you know, shooting with water. Those are kind of good things to know. How many bites each food requires, that's all good to know. But in terms of like capacity and stretching, I don't really find that super necessary for speed contests. It's just more of a sprint. It's like, just don't trip out of the gate. You can't make stupid mistakes, basically.
Start,
you know what I mean? Like,
there's
no time to stumble. Like, in the first 10 seconds, the thing's over. There's no time to correct yourself.
Once again, speaking with Mickey Sudo, UNLV alum, competitive eater. I'm looking down the list here. Fried asparagus, gyros, pepperoni rolls, hot, of course, hot dogs and wings. I don't see anywhere with Twinkies, tacos. We talked about this last week when Steve announced this and that you were going to be part of this. And somebody asked, you know, what would be the food that you would, and I said, for me, donuts would be great for me because the two foods I think you do not have to be hungry for, I think it's against the law to even say I'm not hungry, is donuts and pizza. I don't think you have to be hungry for either one want a slice or a donut. Are there pizza eating contests?
Oh, absolutely. And there are a lot of pizza challenges. You know, it's been a while since I've looked at food challenges in the Las Vegas area, but that's kind of how I got my start. You know, finish this big pizza and collect the jackpot. I've done a number of those here in Florida. When we're in Buffalo, New York for the chicken wing eating competition, the day prior to that, we actually have like a first to finish 5 pounds of food contest. It's like it's a sprint. And half of that, or actually more than half that weight, comes from pizza. So, I get a little bit of practice. I'm just looking at, not my Wikipedia page, but the Major League Eating page. If you go to majorleagueeating.com and just, like, pull up my stats, like, under rankings, unfortunately, I've dropped down number 5. That's where you can find me. But at the very bottom, it says donuts glazed. Each one was 2 ounces. And I ate 87 donuts in 8 minutes. And that was in Thailand.
What was the consistency of that? Because you mentioned you talked about consistency.
Yeah, they were a little bit heavier, more dense. That was a dunking contest, and it was, let me tell you, like I had hot liquid to dunk in, but just the ambient temperature was like it was like a sauna to begin with. So that's maybe why the numbers were a little bit higher. 87 and 8 minutes. I mean, for that pace, you know, that I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if I can eat that fast on Friday, but, you know, I'll be shooting for something like that.
I mean, 24 donuts, you'd basically be done in like 230, 240. Mickey Sudo's with us. So this is for, a great thing for awareness of breast cancer. It's also great for you. I don't know how often UNLV has called you and said, hey, you're a distinguished alum. Come out and do an event with us. That's cool.
Pretty sure UNLV, I don't know where I fall. I don't know. UNLV has a lot of distinguished alums. I don't know where I fall on that.
You're the greatest.
It is flattering to get a call. I think like Guy Fieri comes to mind, but I'm sure there are like many, many people on that list ahead of me. But I mean, you know, I can make people laugh and, you know, have a good time, celebrate at this awesome event, you know, just kind of have fun raising, you know, awareness for charity and a good cause. I mean, it's just all around a great time.
Mickey, this, one alum that stood out to me, and I thought about this last week, he was before your time, but he was the world's strongest man. He won the Mark Phillippe, and he was a strength coach for the Rebels for a while, but he won the world's strongest man competition where you see, like, them pulling the semi-truck with their, pulling it along with the belt around their way. I would imagine that someone like that, a power lifter, a strength coach, something like that, that they could possibly compete.
Absolutely. Jeff Esper, who's ranked at number 2 or 3 with Major League Eating, he's a former power lifter, and he's, like, unstoppable when it comes to some foods. Like, he can eat pizza faster than anyone. It's kind of weird. Like, all of us have, like, little niche things. Like, my husband, Nick, is a former bodybuilder. Jeff Esper is former power lifter. This guy from Australia, James Webb, played, he called it football, soccer, at a high level. So it's just like you've got some very competitive, traditionally athletic people who do pretty well in competitive eating. I don't know what the correlation is. They were just very competitive and hate losing no matter what it is.
Mickey, did you watch Kobayashi and Chestnut? I thought it was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen in terms of the lifting each other to a new level. It was nuts.
Oh, absolutely. That was such an awesome event. And, you know, the thing is, like, I think it was produced so well. I would love to see Netflix throw together a women's counterpart to that event. So, I mean, they had Leah eating watermelon, but, you know, I'd love to see her maybe, like, you know, throw her hat in the ring with hot dogs. And, you know, maybe we could do a Sudo versus Chuck Kiefer, you know, women's hot dog eating showdown. It wouldn't be unfinished beef. I don't know how that would go, but... I just think bringing competitive eating more mainstream, especially to the Netflix platform, was really cool, and I can't wait to see more of that.
So one last thing, and this is about this contest. I noticed when Chestnut and Kobayashi were going at it, they were freaking drenched. They couldn't dunk, but they were drinking a lot. Do I need to, like, should I do this in like a raincoat? Because I'm going for it. Like, I want to be soaked. What do I wear?
That's such a breath of fresh air, because typically when, you know, non-competitive eaters, you know, get talked into doing contests, they're just so timid and they're like eating with their pinkies out. And I would love to see somebody like dive head first and not be afraid to get messy. Water is your friend. It's going to help lubricate the donuts. I think there's like a diminishing return point. It doesn't mean like the messier you are, the better, but, the water definitely helps you go down. And if it's a dunking contest, you can't be afraid to, you know, get some, you know, drips on your shoes or something like that.
Exactly. Well, Mickey, we appreciate a couple minutes here. I'm thrilled that you're going to be in this contest and destroy all of us, and we'll see you on Friday, okay?
I can't wait to see how you do.
We'll see ya. I have no shot. But I am a little bit concerned about the mess, because I have big garbage bags at home. Do I go with a garbage bag as a top? Definitely have to do shorts and some old sneakers. And then I might do I don't think I can do hot black coffee. That seems crazy to me, but okay. She did pitch the whole flavor differential.
Well, she pitched the flavor differential. We talked about it last week. And she today revealed hot. Here's the thing, Steve. You could dip coffee into water and it'll... But I wonder if the hot, she maybe slipped and didn't... But does it make it diminish a little bit? Like, does it... The hot makes it...
She gave me her trick. She gave me her trick.
That could be the...
And I love
so you could bring hot water.
Hot liquid. I it's never too hot.
Yeah.
I could win a contest like that.
I think she slipped and wasn't supposed to reveal it was hot, because the hot sort of disintegrates the cakiness.
Justin Watkins in about a half an hour. We'll come up with an over-under on 2 dozen donuts eaten in this contest and how fast Mickey's going to do it.
Live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
With Max and Devontae at practice this week, and is Michael Mayer back in the building?
With Max and 17, all depends on where they're at health-wise. As of right now, status quo.
Whoa.
And Mike is still the only person.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, didn't give away anything. Didn't say his name, though. Is that a little bit of a heat? We shall see. I'm excited to learn where he goes, how he goes, and what teams are inevitably interested.
Yeah, I'm sure that a lot of Raiders fans are very interested in that part, since they've run into difficulties managing Devontae Adams. Now it's public. I don't know what that does for you in terms of trade value. I think it's diminished, but we're going to find out here, and we'll go through some of the teams that have already expressed interest and then where Devontae wants to go. We were just talking to Mickey Sudo. She's going to be at that Syracuse game on Friday. UNLVtickets.com is where you go to get the ticket. 6 o'clock kickoff, 4:30 to 5:45. They're going to have a big happy hour. You can get an early big happy hour by the Torch Terrace. Half price on domestic drafts, other drink specials as well. Man, I've had so many conversations in the market and out of the market about how well UNLV football is playing. This is uncharted territory. We're in the top 25 for the first time in both of the major polls in program history. Give me a little Odom here on the hunger and the focus.
It was business as usual. We've got a very mature team. We went to work on Monday and had a great Monday practice. I thought our Tuesday practice was the best one we've had all year. I thought our Wednesday was even better than that, and I thought our Thursday was as well. So our players, we've got strong leadership. They understand what is the mission that we're on, and they got it done. I was out there and follow their lead a lot, and credit to our leadership, credit to our assistant coaches, and we understood that we needed to play really well today to have a chance, and our guys understood that, and they went to work and executed at a high level.
There you go. Barry Odom on focusing, difficult week last week, and now they're in that position that so many football teams are, you know, dealing with that prosperity, and Syracuse is going to be tough. They throw the ball all over the yard, Willie.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I just wrote for AP my preview, the advance for, and I'll be out there covering the the game. But this kid, McCord, Kyle McCord, he just registered a career-high 385 yards passing against Holy Cross. It's kind of funny that they just beat up Holy Cross, and former quarterback, that's Luca, came from Holy Cross. Anyway, first Syracuse quarterback to throw for 300 yards in four straight games. He leads the nation in passing yards per game, 364.8, and completions per game. McCord's 1,459 yards passing is the highest total for an Syracuse quarterback through the first four games of a season in program history. So this kid is setting marks in Syracuse. And UNLV's defense is going to be, you know, they're going to be tested, obviously. But I think the confidence is it's set. It's embedded within their fabric at this point. Four games in, two Big 12 road wins. I really don't think that they're going to be intimidated. And if the kid has a big first quarter, they'll make the right adjustments and get it done.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, back here at Cofield and Company. Let's bring in Caleb Herring. Caleb, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Not much. It's a great week. Excited about the Friday game, but not much going on.
I want to get to the scout of Syracuse, but let's look back before we look forward, and that is the changeover from Matthew Sluka to Haj Malik Williams. And you noticed a lot in terms of what Haj Malik brought to the field. I thought one of the cool things you talked about during the game is in the pass game, the importance of the mesh point, which is normally that handoff or fake handoff, quarterback running back, that it actually does mean a lot to all facets of the offense.
It does, absolutely. And if you think about like a hard sell and like a play action pass, obviously that's a little bit different than an RPO game, and the mesh point's different there. But the same way that a quarterback that has a good fake and has good consistency with that fake, it tricks the defense better. Right? Like you demand more movement, more reaction out of the defense, which opens up space on the back end. And that was the case last week with Haj Malik Williams and his mesh point with the RPOs, not just his mesh point with the RPOs when he decided to throw it, but when they went triple option and we had those quarterback keepers, it was mentioned that, by some others that a lot of his rushing yards were non-contact yards. Like he wasn't having a bunch of yards after contact like we were seeing with Matthew Sluka. And part of that is because of how efficient he was and how deceptive he was at the mesh point making those decisions. And then some of the completions downfield, I mean, it was 13 for 16, which is a very high clip for percentage. I will say that I was sweating my record for a single game completion percentage being broken. If he had more attempts, he probably would have gotten it. But the fact that he carried out the mesh point really sold the fakes, and it opened up the space on the back end, especially in that second half, to open up the third quarter when they really drove down the field efficiently with the RPO. So he did a great job, and I think he did some of the things we expected him to do. We tried to tell people he was going to be just fine, and we knew – you and I knew that he was capable of being a starter day one if he needed to. Good for him and good for the team that came out and had the performance he did against Fresno State.
You know what's amazing about sports analysis and sports talk, and we always have to be hot take. I think the reaction to Haj Malik Williams playing one game as a starter and playing well, like all of a sudden now clearly he was better than Sluka, which I don't think that story's been told yet. And now people are looking for this narrative, like, why was Sluka ever starting in the first place? We've told you all along, it was razor thin. And by the way, nothing's proven that Haj Malik Williams is better than Sluka. It's one game. And the other part of this is, sometimes coaches don't get it right. And I'm not saying they didn't get it right, because I don't know on Haj Malik. But guess what? When it's an even race sometimes, Caleb, it's not easy to make a decision.
And it also, I will say this too, like the or that we kind of joke about on the depth chart in week one, because there was an or.
Yes.
Like that, it could have been an honest or. Like it could be any one of them. It just depends on who looks better in warmups today, right? But no, it was a close competition. And you and I both said that it could easily be Haj Malik Williams. Obviously, I thought there was just a stylistic preference difference. And I think, you know, what UNLV wants to be as far as utilizing a running quarterback was undeniable this year either way. And I think they just made a decision based on, you know, whatever their in-house feelings were. It doesn't mean necessarily that there's this big light-years gap between Haj Malik Williams. And he was way more efficient in the passing game. It still didn't eclipse 200 yards passing. And so if you want to talk about, especially in today's world where it's like, you know, everybody cares about the yards or not, it wasn't like the pass game was just so explosive. It was what happened in Fresno State was more about the ability to make decisions and operate the offense smoothly. That was the smoothest the offense has run for 60 minutes, I'll say, since we've seen the go-go offense. And I think that was what I, as I'm digesting the game more and more, even last year with all the great things that they did last year, there were times when they just went dead on offense and they couldn't move the ball again, produce within a game. Last week against Fresno State, I think they operated smoothly, the most consistently that we've seen. And Haj Malik Williams, the quarterback, just happened to have a big hand in that. And I think that's really all we were seeing. And it's not to diminish what happened, because it was a great win. And it's a great way for Haj Malik Williams to start his Rebel career as a starter. And I just want to see him now stack those kind of games on top of each other. And obviously, if he does, the Rebels will find themselves where they want to be at the end of the year, and he will find himself in a premium position in the history of UNLV football, where he will be looked at as somewhat of a hero if they get where they need to be.
Caleb Herrings, the former quarterback for the Rebels, one of the voices on radio for Rebel football. On the scout, what's the biggest thing that UNLV needs to worry about with Syracuse? What scares you?
Their tight end play. I think that's offensively the first thing that stands out with Gaston. He's a big guy, fast guy for a tight end. Really can play as a receiver. Not quite sure how impactful he is as a blocker, especially against UNLV's defense. I don't think he's going to be, you know, he's not Kaleo in the trenches as far as blocking and moving guys down the field and open up run lanes. And that's not what this team wants to be anyway. With McCord at quarterback, they're going to spin it. They're going to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game. And they're going to consistently force you to beat them in the secondary. And when they have a tight end who occupies the middle of the field, who's got the speed to finish big plays, it makes you kind of concerned, like how explosive plays could swing a game that, you know, UNLV could control in every other facet. But if Kyle McCord is able to get these explosive quick drives and get down the field by connecting to his big tight end and his other skilled receivers out there, I think that does become a tad bit worrisome. After what the Rebels were able to do to Fresno State, another quarterback-centric offense, I think I have a little bit more confidence. Turning Fresno over four times, who came into the game with a +4 turnover ratio, and they were tied with UNLV in that regard. So they were typically, Fresno State is really good at protecting the football. But the fact that UNLV was able to turn them over four times, and with the way McCord has been with the ball, a little loose with it down the field, I think the Rebels can capitalize on that as well and should find an advantage in the turnover margin again. But Gaston at tight end and McCord, obviously, at quarterback. Anytime you got the signal caller of his caliber, he's going to present some promise through defense.
Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback and, of course, part of the broadcast team. He'll be on the call this Friday against Syracuse. Caleb, let's shift some focus to the NFL. Baker Mayfield had some comments. Sounds like it was a little apprehensive, a little tense, a little nervous. With the GOAT in the locker room, Brady torches him from the booth. Your thoughts?
Well, so Baker Mayfield, these podcasts are going to get people in trouble, right? Like these podcasts are supposed to be this platform where you can go and like kind of speak your truth and say what you feel and unfiltered or whatever. But they always get back to the legacy media, I guess, of the world, if you want to call it that. But everybody's going to hear these little sound bites, and maybe they're taken out of context, and I don't know how Baker's going to spin the context of his quote, but he basically said, you know, he was brought to Tampa Bay in the time after Tom Brady, when everybody was so serious and so stern, the organization realized that they were not a contender anymore, and they wanted Baker to come in and, you know, be himself, be fun, bring back the passion for football. And that's kind of what he said on the podcast. Fast forward, now Tom Brady's calling the Buccaneers-Eagles game this past Sunday. And, you know, they obviously have to tee up the clip and say, hey, you know, Baker Mayfield says he's fun and you're not. Tom Brady with the most GOAT clapback of all time. He says, you know, I thought winning championships was about serious, being serious and about having that champion's mindset. If I wanted to have fun, I'd go to Disneyland with my kids. And it was just like, wow, why did you crush Baker Mayfield that way? It was legendary. It was great. You feel bad for Baker because you're stepping into the GOAT ring, and nobody's ever put Baker Mayfield in the GOAT conversation, but that was just GOAT talk. And you wouldn't be expecting that. But in what has otherwise been a a subpar start to his broadcasting career, Tom Brady provided us with a gem with the clapback material. I didn't know Tom had it in him. I didn't know he had that degree of petty. But he went there with Baker. And who knows? I don't know for sure if they're if he was just joking around, if he and Baker, they talked before the game on the field. So I'm sure their relationship is fine. But that was just a moment where it was like, my goodness, poor Baker. You step to the GOAT, and he kind of puts you in your place a little bit with that one.
What's going to happen with the Raiders and Davante Adams? Do they send him where he wants to go? Should he want to be with Derek Carr or Aaron Rodgers? What happens?
I don't think the Raiders really have a choice at this point, because if they trade Davante Adams, they essentially are declaring they're going to tank. So I think you do right by him, because I think the organization has done wrong by him so far. And the way that he got here, Derek Carr, he's mentioned, was a big reason for why he made the decision come or wanted to come to the Las Vegas Raiders. And then they kind of kick him out. So he never really gets the complimentary weapons around him. Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro, they all exit. So he's left by himself on the offense, in essence. So I think the good person in me wants to say you do right by him and send him where he wants to go. But obviously, you're going to send them what gets you the best return. And what they listed as far as what they'd be willing to hear initially, I mean, it's not a very hefty price tag. I think a lot of people are going to be knocking at the door to get that. And maybe that was the intention. They wanted to field as many suitors as possible, so their options are open to them. But I would love to see a reunion with he and Aaron Rodgers. And I think I would even love it more, because I think, honestly, the division that the Saints are in right now, he has a better chance to get to the postseason there than he does with the way the Jets look in the AFC. And I know that hurts for you to hear, Steve, but it looks like a pretty dysfunctional family over there in New York. So I would much rather see him with the new-look Saints offense getting back to the Davante Adams that we knew in the old days. Obviously, the Commanders would be, you know, he might win the NFC East if he goes to the Commanders. So, but there's plenty of options. It's just a matter of if the Raiders want to acquiesce to his request or be selfish and get what they can as a franchise.
Back to college football for a couple minutes here. Heisman race, I actually think the favorite and the best bet right now should be Travis Hunter. Now, what I'm banking on is that Colorado gets the 7 wins. I didn't think they could do it. But if they get the 7 wins, then I think he can legitimately say, hey, you know what, or we can, he's the Heisman winner. Ashton Gentry certainly making a case. And as an MVP of a team, he's certainly up there if that's what the Heisman was about. His performance has been just ridiculous. He's just building on what he was a year ago. No one can tackle him. He is a freaking monster. And I did say at the beginning of the week, like, I see some Ray Rice in him, but I'm also thinking, like, this is like poor man's Barry Sanders, because he's about the same size and his moves are great and no one can get him down.
It reminds me a little bit, so I'll throw a name in there, Leonard Fournette, because Leonard Fournette's run at LSU, where he was just untackleable for chunks of games, similar to that too. So there's, I mean, you could throw a lot of great running backs in the mix with him, but he's on a tear right now. And I think he would be, in all honesty, if he wasn't a group of five running back, because that's what's going to hold him back. I think they're going to maybe potentially be a two-loss team going into the end of the season, if that. So his from the running back position, to be impacting the game he is, to be an unstoppable force, averaging 10 yards a touch, that's ridiculous. And some would argue that he's probably seen the best defenses that he's going to see already, so it might get easier for him as the season progresses, outside, of course, of UNLV, who is one of the best run defenses in the country at this point statistically. So I think he has a shot as well. I really hate the argument around the Heisman coming down to the team success. I think what Travis Hunter has done in college football for the last two seasons at Colorado has been spectacular. And yes, I get it. You want to have some wins under your belt that have Heisman. I think if Travis Hunter was playing at Alabama, he would be just as impactful to the game of football, and he would be just as individually successful as he has been at Colorado, and they would just happen to be winning more games. I think the story of Colorado and what they've been able to do under Deion Sanders and how they're must-see TV, I think if you're going to talk about team success, I think that should also be weighed in. And in that case, he should be in New York for sure as a finalist, and that's at this point in the season. Obviously, there's a long way to go. And we could honestly, I don't like to put this out there, but we'll see if he lasts the entire season. The guy's playing 90 to 100 games or 100 snaps a game over a 12 game season, and these games are going to intensify as he gets the Big 12 play, and they start to matter more. So we'll see if he holds up to finish the year. But As far as right now, I'm right there with you. He needs to be right atop the conversation. And I know it's a quarterback award, so you're going to have your quarterbacks, the award. I think Milroe from Alabama has made a stake. Carson Beck, had he won that game against Alabama, I think that's his Heisman moment in week four. But obviously that game will go down in history as one of the best of the season. But I think Jenty right now for me and right behind him, Travis Hunter, should be the top two for the Heisman if I had a vote on it.
I also find it fascinating how he's going to handle the NFL draft if he wants to go as a dual threat guy. If he declared that he wants to play wide receiver, then I think he's a second or third round pick. If he says he's playing cornerback, then he's a first round pick. I think there's a value on the position, and I know a lot of people love wide receivers and the impact they have now. To me, that guy as a full-time cornerback has a lot more value than as a receiver.
I agree. I think a cornerback, anytime a defense has a cornerback where they can just say, you're locked up, we don't have to worry about this side of the field, I think that's such a benefit. And we haven't really seen it. You go back to Darrell Revis maybe was the last time we saw a guy who was just a shutdown corner where you didn't have to worry about it. I think Travis Hunter instills that kind of fear in offenses if he's on the field. It is a premier position. But how about the untapped value, the potential? I don't know if an NFL player would ever go both ways. I don't know that it's sustainable. I don't know that teams will take that kind of a risk financially to put two positions in one person. But talk about the value, though. If you were a team willing to take that risk in the NFL, what you could save as far as salary cap and having to build a roster up if you've got two key players in one guy. That's an interesting concept. And, again, I don't think it will work in the NFL. But he seems like he's open to the possibility. I just don't think most teams would be willing to take that risk from a liability and injury standpoint.
Caleb Herring is with us. Have about a minute left. Social media can be dangerous, even with adults. And Antonio Pierce couldn't control himself the other day and, you know, liked a post that pissed off Davante Adams. I was thinking of you today going back to Bobby Houck and how much Bobby Houck hated social media. See, he was right. This is why everyone's banned.
He was right. He was right all those years ago. You know, now he's an avid social media user. You can follow him now. But, you slip up. And once you slip up, it's there forever. He tried to delete the like, but it's like, no. We saw it. It's over. And then what the message implies, I think whatever the story is, and we know about narratives around here, but the narrative generated by one double tap on a photo can really derail the franchise. And that's, I think, the relationship, whatever, and especially in a guy like Antonio Pierce's case, where he's a guy who prided himself on locker room relationships, on being able to relate to guys and win the locker room over. If your best player, at least offensively, essentially feels slighted by you now publicly, and it seems like you don't have a good relationship with him, then what do you really have to hang your hat on if you're Antonio Pierce? And that's the truth of it. That was his best asset, which is his locker room galvanization, and he hasn't been able to do that with Davante Adams at least. So that's a very public mess for the Raiders, and we'll see how they handle it. Obviously, now the trade speculation and the trade offers are going to start rolling in.
Caleb, we appreciate it, man. We'll see you out there on Friday for Syracuse and UNLV.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good week.
This part of the show is brought to you by Circa Las Vegas, Circa Fight House at Stadium Swim. That means all the big fights are at Stadium Swim. UFC 307 in Salt Lake is going to be up on that 143-foot screen. Title fight at 205 with Pajeda and Roundtree. I think the biggest star, future star in women's fighting, Kayla Harrison. She's on the card. And then the 135 titles on the line with the women with Rocky Pennington and Juliana Pena. And then a bunch of other veterans and legend of the fight game are at UFC 307. And don't forget, on Thursdays, Cofield and Company is live at Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas in Cabana 7. Make sure you stop by and see us.